Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the 49ers Insider Podcast on NBC Sports Bay Area.com. Introducing your host, San Francisco 49ers Insider, Matt Maiocco.
On this edition of the 49ers Insider Podcast, we catch up with former 49ers offensive lineman Randy Cross. Randy Cross will be among a lot of 49ers at Levi's Stadium on Sunday as the team honors Dwight Clark and that 1981 Super Bowl team, the 49ers' first Super Bowl champion. We'll talk to Randy Cross about that team, the catch, college football, the current 49ers, all that kind of good stuff. So that's coming up a little bit later on the 49ers Insider Podcast, Randy Cross. But right now I'm going to dial up Jeff Garcia, and we're going to be talking about this current 49ers team and what he sees from the quarterback situation.
Hello.
Hey, Jeff, it's Matt.
Matt, hey.
How's everything going?
Good, man.
So you're...
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. You're doing the taxi service thing, taking your daughter to...
Yeah, she has gymnastics for the next couple hours, so just came out here, dropped her off, and watching them stretch right now.
So. Are you? Do you watch? So is she? How old is your daughter?
She's 9. So
is she a tumbler? Can she do some impressive things yet?
Well, she's getting there. So they moved her up into the competitive level.
Nice.
So she's training to start competing come the start of the new year, I guess, is when their season starts in like January, February.
Oh.
I don't know how serious I want her to get into it just because I see these girls banged up and stuff. And I know how much time they have to commit to it as well. And she likes to play, like she plays flag football right now. She likes to play basketball. She's involved in other sports. And if they, you know, they want them to pretty much focus on, I mean, this takes, they're 2 nights a week for 2 hours. And the more they do it, the more, you know, they're going to demand more time and more money and all those
things.
Oh,
yeah.
You know,
yeah,
so.
I've been there. I know.
Yeah.
But you hit on a key word, your daughter's competitive gymnastics. And I want to talk to you about the 49ers and their quarterback situation, because it looks to me like when we talk about Brian Hoyer and we saw what C.J. Beathard did on Sunday, it looks to me like C.J. Beathard is really competitive.
Well, it looks like he's got that physical and mental toughness, the thing that you like to see out of a quarterback, out of a guy at that position, to be a leader, to demonstrate what it's all about and to get everybody on board following him and to play that same way, to play hungry, to play intense, to demand perfection out of yourself, to want to make plays, to want to make every play. And as a young guy, he'll learn that there are certain plays where he'll just have to give up and get rid of the football and not take the sack. But to see him go out there and compete, and especially knowing that he didn't get the reps all week long during practice, he had to mentally prepare himself for that moment. And to go out there and perform the way that he did on a big stage like that in a situation where they were down and then came back and had a chance to actually – win it at the end, it was exciting. It was exciting to see that happen, and it was exciting to see the team rally as well, because not only did the offense start playing better, the defense started playing better. Special teams had a big return. Those type of things were important in order for them to have a chance to get back in the game. Everybody had to rise to the occasion, and they did.
And it's a very small sample size, but You know, you were competitive. You were, all the adjectives you used to describe C.J. Beathard, people have used to describe you. Do you see a little bit of yourself in C.J. Beathard?
Well, I'd have to see more of him playing, but, you know, I think
those,
anytime,
those intangibles, you know what I'm talking about? Those,
yeah, I think, well, I think, and I don't know C.J. yet, and I hope I get a chance to meet him down the road, but, you know, I think that there's something to be said for the family that he comes from. First of all, it's a football. They have a football background. He grew up around the game, and you can tell that he has those instinctive special skills to him. It was nice to see him extend a play to push the line of scrimmage, to attack the line of scrimmage and keep his eyes up as a passer and make that big throw down the field for the touchdown late in the game. Those type of things instinctively and creatively are what that position needs to have happen. And you kept waiting for Brian to be that guy, and he just wasn't. And that's what I think frustrated me about Brian, was that here he had a great opportunity to come in and to be a starter and to secure a position and take hold of a position for really the first time in his career, to not really have to look behind him at the other guy who's chomping at his heels. But in retrospect, maybe he just is who he is, and that's why he's played for so many teams, and that's why he's never been considered a full-time starter or the guy in the National Football League. And again, he left a door open, a window open for an opportunity for another guy to step in and take advantage of it. And that's what CJ did. I mean, he was very opportunistic on Sunday in stepping onto the field and immediately having an impact.
So CJ Beathard will make his first career start Sunday at Levi Stadium against the Dallas Cowboys. There's a lot for 49er fans, I think, to see on Sunday, and some of it has to do with C.J. Beathard. But I think the big thing is they are going to be honoring the 1981 team, and Dwight Clark is scheduled to be there. I mean, that was just such a magical time in 49ers history. You were right around, 12 years old for that first Super Bowl, the catch. And I know you come from a football family. What's your memory of seeing that game and that play?
Well, I definitely remember it. I was 11 years old. As a matter of fact, there was a player on that team that I had a friendship with who played for my dad. So I was especially interested in watching the 49ers. But obviously, being a Bay Area kid, growing up watching those guys, watching Joe Montana and remembering that exact play, seeing it play out and happen, and just the excitement in my living room when Dwight leaped up high and made that catch. It was just awesome. And you talk about one play electrifying an organization and really being the signature play for that organization to go on to win 5 Super Bowls over the next 15 to 20 years. I mean, it was an amazing moment, and an amazing moment to take place right there in Candlestick at home against the much rivaled and hated Dallas Cowboys. And it was a play that got them over the hump and led to just some greatness for that organization. And to watch them in that Super Bowl that year at Palo Alto, that was the one in Palo Alto.
Pontiac, Michigan.
That was the one against Cincinnati.
Yeah.
So against Cincinnati, and to see them go on to win a Super Bowl, you know, that was a great moment. But yes, that play against that team, that moment will forever live in my memory. I can visualize it very easily. I mean, we've seen it 1,000 times since, but it never gets old seeing that play.
It never gets old. Who was the player that played for your dad?
Well, actually, he came on, it must have been a year or two after he played in the Super Bowl that was in Palo Alto.
Okay.
Carl Monroe, who
okay.
was out of
yeah.
Overfelt High School, caught a touchdown pass from Joe in that next Super Bowl against Dan Marino and the Miami Dolphins. So, you know, I was very in tune with that one, but I, you know, hey, I remember those moments, those 49er moments. I remember the drive later, obviously, in the next Super Bowl against Cincinnati. And, you know, it's just those things I grew up with. And I was fortunate to be able to witness, maybe not firsthand in the stadium, but always watched them on TV.
When you were, when you came to the 49ers, was sprint right option in the playbook?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. A staple of the West Coast system. And, you know, you read it out, you're looking to the flat first, and then it's to the pivot route, basically, which is what Dwight was running on that. He was the second option and just worked the back end line of the end zone. And, you know, Joe had to pump fake once to get some big guys up in the air, and then threw a high ball that only Dwight could get to. And, you know, I remember Everson Walls being the guy in coverage, and basically was left in the dust to watch that spike happen and that excitement happen for the 49ers.
Yeah. Do you remember, did you ever go to that second option? Did you ever throw to the guy running the, you know, at the back of the end zone?
Oh yeah. You know, it maybe didn't happen where it took place that close where I got to the second option in the end zone. But, as a matter of fact, let me correct that. I did do it. It wasn't with San Francisco, but we ran it in Philadelphia. I mean, same coaching staff coming out of the West Coast system under Holmgren, and we ran sprint right option against the Washington Redskins, and my first flat route was taken away, and Dante Stallworth worked the pivot back end line, and I caught him on the sideline for a touchdown. Yeah.
And when you do that, do you think of, I know you're in the heat of a game, but
right,
do you think
you're
about
in the moment.
Catch?
Yeah. I don't know if that necessarily crept into my mind, but, you know, I mean, that's just something that when you run it so often, and it went, when it works out to happen the way you script it. I mean, that's the greatness of the play. And, you know, it always started back there with Coach Walsh and Joe and Dwight Clark and all those guys running that play.
Well, there's going to be so many players off that 1981 team. There are going to be so many players from other 49ers teams there on Sunday. In fact, heck, even Everson Walls is scheduled to be there, believe it or not, to take part in whatever festivities they have. And you will be there as well as analyst on 49ers pregame and postgame shows on NBC Sports Bay Area. What are you looking forward to most from seeing, you know, what the 49ers have in store on the field, off the field on Sunday?
Well, I think for me, I want to see what sort of energy they come out with on Sunday with a new quarterback on the field. I want to see how the team rallies around him. I want to see what takes place within Carlos Hyde. I want to see how competitive he is because of the rumors that have been put out there and because of the lack of production that has really taken place at that running back position. I want to see what type of fighter he is. And this defense as well. I think we've had some ups and downs on the defensive side. There's been some struggles at times. They've gone through a lot of injury. Obviously hoping to get some of those guys back. Hopefully Foster will return soon. If he's not scheduled to come back this weekend, then soon, but hopefully it'll be this weekend. And with Reed back and getting some of those guys healthy enough to compete and see them continue what they started to do last Sunday in the second half of the game, let's not just see that as a one-time thing. Because consistency is the most important thing in this game. And you have to have it in all three aspects of the game, especially when you're a young team. Hey, there are going to be some mistakes out there, and there are going to be some times, some struggles that they have to fight through and get over. But I want to see how they respond. They're going to be back home, and it's a great opportunity for them to take on a good football team and to really – do something for themselves and to get over that hump. They've been right there, chomping at the door, and they just haven't been able to finish it. I want to see them finish one. And I think it'll be an exciting time, obviously, with the 81 team there, with so many great players from the tradition and from the organization that really established the greatness that people expect out of this franchise. And, this team has suffered its blows so far, but they've been fighting back. And I just want to see them finish one for once and get in that win column and get that thing going in the right direction.
All right, and give you something positive to talk about on the postgame show.
No doubt.
Yeah, all right.
No doubt.
Well, Jeff, it's been fun. Thanks a lot. I will see you on Sunday at Levi Stadium.
All right. Sounds great. Thanks, Matt.
And now here's my conversation with Randy Cross on the 49ers Insider Podcast. Well, Randy, thank you so much for joining me on the 49ers Insider Podcast.
No problem. My pleasure.
Yes. Yeah, so, first off, tell me about your routine. I know you still follow football very closely. What do you do on Fridays, or Saturdays, I should say, as far as the college football? Are you able to watch a lot of that?
Yeah, I watch a lot of it. I actually still do a lot of it on TV, too. I do a TV show in New York every Tuesday night called Inside College Football. And then Thursday, go to a college game. This week, I'll be at UCF at Navy. And then spin that around and, head out to the Bay Area. But, it's a weekly thing. It keeps me really busy during the football season and pay really close attention to college football because these days that's kind of my thing.
Yeah, and so now on NFL Sundays, do you have several games going at once, or are you able to lock into one game, or how do you go about it?
I follow the Niners still pretty closely. Follow the Falcons fairly closely because I live in the Atlanta area. Outside of that, it's kind of, where they come and where I happen to be. If I'm up at the club where I can have a few TVs there, or, at the house if we're having people over or something. But, I think it's been a pretty unpredictable year, that's for sure, football-wise, when it comes to college or NFL.
Have you caught very many of the 49ers games here recently? I mean, they're going through an unprecedented streak in NFL history, having lost five consecutive games by 3 points or fewer.
Yeah. I mean, it's got to be really, really tough. First of all, for the fans and for the team, but just from the eyeball test standpoint, there's no comparison to the kind of team they are this year. I mean, the defense is fun to watch. The offense with Beathard yesterday was entertaining. They scored. They haven't won, and that's obviously the bottom line. But, I think with Shanahan and Lynch and that new regime there have got going, and the kind of guys they got playing, I'm choosing to look at it really positive, personally.
Yeah, and I'm going to give you a little bit of a positive spin here as well. I went back and looked. In 1979, when you guys went 2-14, you had five losses by a touchdown or less. So in a lot of those games, you were competitive. And then in 1980, when you went 6-10, you had six losses by a touchdown or less. And then, of course, we all know what happened in 1981. So do you think that those two seasons under Bill Walsh and the players could see you guys were getting more and more competitive? Do you think that had a big effect in the overall arc of where your team ended up?
Well, when you're trying to reestablish something, you're not going to suddenly exponentially, across the board get better. The reality is you're going to get better on a side of the ball probably first. And back in those days, 79 and 80, the offense was more effective. Those of us on the offense, we saw more positive change and more positive, prospects because we were scoring points and we were moving the ball. Now defense, it took that great draft and getting amazing guys like Ronnie and, Eric and the rest of them on the team and some of those key veterans. But yeah, I mean, it's just what I hope the people that are going through this now, if you could give them any kind of word of advice, is, you know, you got to take some solace or some positives exactly where you can get them. It ain't going to be easy. You know, it's a definition of sort of keeping your head down and just keep drilling, because these are times when you're losing. It's the worst thing in the world. There isn't anything worse than being a professional athlete or being a professional coach and just losing. That will wear you out and wear on you more than anything else.
Did you feel in 79 and 80 that things were going in the right direction, that, you know, especially in 79 when you guys went 2-14, could you see
again? I mean, we'd been 2-14 the year before, yeah, and we were probably one of the worst teams in the history of the NFL. And then we're 2-14 the next year and might be one of the best 2-14s ever.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there was a huge difference between those two teams. And then, you know, 80, we had a losing streak in the season, you know, probably for the better part of the season, that frustrated the hell out of everybody, you know, including Bill.
So then what do you see in this 49ers team where you think that this 0-6 is a lot better than last year's 2-14?
Well, we'll see how they end up. You know, but if they do this all year long, and I'm sure right now you couldn't convince that what I'm saying is true for, you know, several million dollars. But, you know, you keep at it. You keep playing games like this. You keep going after teams the way they're going after teams. You're going to get some wins. You know, are you going to be suddenly dominant? Hell no, you're not going to be dominant. You know, you don't have the dog. You don't have the dogs and the beef to be dominant. But you keep playing like this, you know, people are going to notice. You keep adding talent, then suddenly at some point next year and the year after, you're the one that's handing things out instead of taking it. You just got to remember that. Keep that kind of in your back of your mind.
I guess one of the major differences would be certainly in 1980, you knew who your quarterback was going to be for the long term. You know, C.J. Beathard has a chance, I suppose, but still, it's not really settled as far as that position goes of what
no,
the 49ers
no,
have.
Not exactly.
Yeah, that's an understatement, huh?
Yeah. Say, I mean, that's just among others. You know, and the frustrating thing, I'm sure for the fans, is you had household names at positions on the offensive side of the ball. That are no longer there, and they're not exactly old men now. And you had household names on the defensive side of the ball that are no longer there, that aren't exactly old men now. So it's, you know, it kind of is what it is, that everybody's least favorite term. But, you know, the people I feel the worst for are, you know, the fans. And the ones that are actually in that building going through it, because it's a dark mood. It's a dark situation, that's for sure. The good news is when you turn something like that around, there's a little extra motivation in the back of your mind, because you know, that was so great for us. There was a pretty good sized group of us on that 81 team that had been through those 2 years and had been bad. And when you know what your point of reference is, you fight a little bit harder because you don't want to go back the other way.
Let me ask you this, since you do follow the college game so closely, and, you know, right now it looks like the 49ers are going to be having a pretty high draft pick. You know, where does your guy, Josh Rosen, the from your alma mater, UCLA, where does he stand? Sam Darnold, like if you had your druthers, following college football, of which quarterback in this upcoming 2018 draft that you would want leading your team, which one would you pick?
Well, I would currently say E, none of the above.
Okay.
And that's mainly because, you know, I don't know what that team's going to be like. You know, what kind of an offensive line are you going to have? What kind of a running back situation are you going to have? What kind of a receiver group are you going to have? You know, people don't spend enough time looking at the whole teams. You know, there's a reason those really crappy teams get the draft of really good players. It's supposed to even things out, but it rarely does. The young quarterbacks that walk into the most advantageous situations are the ones that go on to teams that have defenses, that have a running game, and have the ability to buy some time for them to come along. And, you know, there's an innumerable examples, you know, you can give of that. But, you know, the young guys in the game right now, Darnold, it makes too many mistakes right now for my tastes. And that's not something that will probably, those numbers won't go down when you start playing against adults. Josh Rosen has not had a hell of a lot of protection at UCLA. I tell you, the more college football I watch, and the more I tend to sort of be a fan of the more of the dual threat kind of quarterback, the kid that you know you can run, that can run, that you know they can get out of trouble. He can always pass, and you're betting on him with the right kind of coach around him to learn, you know, the right way to handle the ball, the right way to go about playing against defenses in the NFL. And that's a crapshoot. I mean, I give you a good example. Atlanta had a guy in Matt Ryan coming out of Boston College that was kind of a, you know, comeback guy, and they took a chance on him, you know, in a draft where Miami took an offensive tackle they thought was going to be playing for him for 12 or 15 years. That didn't quite work out that way. But, I don't see any of those guys right now, the college class, that are going to be in that junior/senior category as being none of them have exactly proven that, you know, they've got glory in their future right now.
Well, Randy, one of the main reason I wanted to get you on the podcast is because the 1981 team will be, at least I'm hearing a very good number of the players off that 1981 team are going to be at Levi's Stadium on Sunday. 49ers play the Cowboys. Of course, anytime the 49ers have played the Cowboys since January of 1982, you can only think of one thing, and that was that NFC Championship game that vaulted you guys to the 49ers' first Super Bowl. Will you be able to make it out to Levi's Stadium on Sunday?
Yeah, I'll be leaving beautiful Dulles in D.C. Bright and early on Sunday morning, fly out to San Francisco and jump in an Uber and head down to the stadium, see the game, jump back in an Uber. You know, probably spend a quick night at a hotel somewhere near the airport, and then Monday morning be on a plane to New York. So.
Have you stayed in contact with many of your former teammates from that team?
Some of them, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and Dwight's a guy that is among those that I'm really looking for. I can't wait to see him, can't wait to see Eddie, can't wait to see Joe. There's a core group of guys that I've gotten to see a few times a year, you know, since we all sort of went our separate ways, but you know, I'm really looking forward. There'll be guys that I think I'll get a chance to see that, you know, maybe I haven't seen in some cases since almost around the time we parted.
Really?
We parted ways in the early 80s.
Well, I would think that Dwight will certainly be the center of attention, you know, as he battles ALS and, you know, the catch. You know, the catch is just it's iconic. One of the biggest moments in not only franchise history but NFL history, and I mean, just, you know, you're lining up at right guard on that play and for that game, of course. What sticks out in your mind about that play and the drive that led up to it?
Well, it was just a pretty good preview of how special both those guys, you know, on that pass were. You know, not only Joe, obviously, but also Dwight. I mean, Dwight, beginning in 81, would have some years that were pretty amazing, stats-wise and every otherwise, when it came to football. Not an uncommon bond, because there's always quarterbacks and receivers that, you know, tend to be buddies and have that kind of unspoken thing between them. But, you know, you just saw in that game, you saw in that moment, just a little window into what the NFL had in store for the next, you know, 10, 15, 20 years.
On that particular play, sprint right option, are you expecting to block for several seconds? Or, I mean, are you thinking that ball's coming out pretty quickly?
Oh, no. I mean, you can look at, you know, we'd run it earlier in the day, and we'd also ran it for a touchdown against Dallas the first time we played them earlier in the year. That's a play that's designed, the first receiver's Freddie. And it's supposed to be a pretty quick stick pass where Joe takes that quick sprint right, but it's out over about the tight end or so when the ball's released. You know, that's why both Farney and I are blocking, and all of a sudden these guys are running to the sideline, and I'm looking at Keith like, where in the heck is he going?
Yeah, so Keith Fonhorst, the right tackle.
Yeah, but, you know, you're playing with one of the best ad-libbers that's ever played football. And, you know, that was 100% Joe.
And it did look like, you know, watching that play, you did stay with your block. And, I mean, when he got rid of, I mean, he bought every last millisecond of time that he could before lofting that ball up.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the play, Dwight lines up, he goes around about back to the goalpost, because about the time he's at the goalpost, that's about when Freddie's supposed to be catching the ball. And then Freddie falls down, and then Dwight, when he sees Joe move, adjusts and, you know, goes back on the end line, moving back towards the sideline. And, you know, for those of us that played on, you know, the Niners charity basketball team, both Joe and Dwight, and their hoop skills and the way they could jump, weren't terribly surprised at, you know, A, how high he threw it, and B, how high Dwight got. And it's one of the most torturous things in the world, and probably one of the sweetest things as a Niner, to just hear the certainty in Cowboys fans' voices every time you're asked about that play. He was throwing it away, wasn't he? Nope, he was putting it where only Dwight could get it. Thank you very much.
From your perspective, did you see the ball in the air? Did you know when Joe released it?
Yeah, I was right there on the sideline looking back down that side of the field at where he was throwing it. Yeah, I saw the whole thing.
And you saw Dwight climb the ladder, and at what point did you immediately think he's got a chance to make that catch?
Oh, if he got his fingers on it, it was going to be a catch. Yeah. That's the one thing about DC. You see, if you go through the play-by-plays, you won't find too many instances where Dwight had a ball on him that he dropped, or near him that he dropped. So, yeah, no, there wasn't much doubt.
Yeah, and then I know Joe didn't immediately join the celebration, didn't he? He had some words for some of those Cowboys, didn't he?
I guess. I mean, he had some choice words for him earlier in the day, because he threw a touchdown to Dwight earlier in the day. So, but that was Joe. The great thing about him was, you know, people nowadays, they couch it in terms. You know, that makes him a very competitive guy. You know, Joe got in people's faces. Joe didn't mind pointing things out to guys, especially the really good players, if they weren't particularly bothering him that day. He'd point that out to them, whether it was Lawrence Taylor or Randy White or Ed Too Tall Jones or anybody.
What kind of teammate was Joe? Would Joe get in your guys' faces if he felt like the protection wasn't where it should be?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, he was a great teammate. He was an amazing teammate. You got nothing to complain about when you got a guy that's your quarterback that can do the things that he did.
And that play, I mean, you talked about it a little bit earlier, but I mean, it really made it, not only vaulted this team to a dynasty, but I mean, Joe and Dwight, and I mean, there were so many guys on that team who were just absolute rock stars, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. And it was a fantastic time. It's one of the things that'll make it so nice to see everybody coming this Sunday. But, you know, it was really the start of the time that the Niners, sort of entered the consciousness. But when you think about it, you know, the key to that all happening, like kind of like what we talked about with those bad teams in 79 and 80, the key was we suddenly had a defense. We suddenly had Ronnie, and we had Eric, and we had Carlton, and we had, you know, Hacksaw, and we had Fred Dean, and go down that list. I mean, for all the rock star value that we had on the offensive side, I don't know if they were treated quite as rock starish, but, you know, look at the Hall of Fame. We got a few guys in that Hall of Fame that played on that defense, and guys that played against that defense during that era will tell you how nasty that group was.
And how do you view the offensive line during that time? I mean, I know, you know, I think you guys picked up Dan Ottick early in that season, and he was over at left tackle. John Ayers, Fred Quillen, yourself, Keith Vonhorst.
Well, four of the five of us had been there for a while. So we were sort of the part of the group that had been through all the bad stuff.
And so, and then you had, you know, one of the legendary assistant coaches, yeah. Bob McKittrick. I would imagine you have a few Bob McKittrick stories.
Oh yeah. Oh no. Bullet Bob was the best. He was, you know, I'll never have anything but great things to say about him, because, you know, I think all the success I had was based on the tenets that, you know, that he sort of continued with me. I had coaches like he and Terry Donahue and Steve Butler that were steeped in the kind of UCLA technique and the way that you played offensive line. And, you know, Bob was the best. Bob really was. Talk about a guy that's in there, and every team in the NFL's got at least one or two in the history of their teams that are like Hall of Fame worthy assistant coaches. That he would definitely be in that category.
Yeah, he was something else. Tough guy, brutally honest. I mean, he did not sugarcoat things, did he?
No, he did not. You knew where you stood with Bob, and you knew there was no gray area on performance. You know, that you always kind of half cringed because you knew what was coming if you weren't, you know, performing up to what, you know, he thought. The hell with what your expectations were. You know, you met his expectations. You're going to be okay.
Why do you think you were such a good fit? I mean, you were three-time Pro Bowl player. You played 13 seasons with the 49ers. Why do you think you were such a good fit for what Bob McKittrick wanted from his offensive linemen?
Well, I think everybody that blocked and on that line had different sort of skill sets, but, you know, we all had to have a little bit of nasty in how we played. We all had to be fairly quick. We all had to have decent speed, because usually you're going to have to do some running. We didn't run the tackles a whole lot, but centers and guards were going to have to be able to move, and that's something I could do. You know, we survived in the gray area when it came to what we were willing to do to opponents. But then again, that was back in the day when, you know, the NFL wasn't the land of kumbaya and brother-in-laws. You know, we had a choice between worrying about the health of the people we played against or worrying about the health of the guys we played with. And honestly, it wasn't much of a tough choice.
Yeah, there was a couple of defensive linemen through the years who weren't all that pleased, but
there were lots of them, but you know what? Most of them were losers. That's what made him more mad than anything else. And Bob didn't teach. One of the great sort of unfair things is sometimes guys get, you know, access media wise and they label people. Nothing Bob ever taught any of us to do or asked any of us to do was illegal. None of it. Zero. Now, they change a few rules on us. You know, we do things and then they go, you can't do that. Well, where does it say that in the rule book? So they change rules. And we'd adjust. So I never lost much sleep over it. But you know, that's
you got the rings to show for it too.
I got the rings to show for it, and that's one of the reasons, you know, you look at the history of those 20 years, you know, you don't see many linemen with more than three or maybe four Pro Bowls. Because, you know, Pro Bowl's a beauty pageant / popularity contest. And our linemen were not popular. In fact, we were semi-hated.
You finished your career as well as anybody could possibly finish his career, retiring after a Super Bowl 23, the win over Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. What do you recall about that decision? I believe you announced it the week of the Super Bowl, correct?
Yeah, it was the media day that then was, I want to say Wednesday or Tuesday. But yeah, I had told Bill on the plane going there, Bill and Bob McKittrick, that I was going to do it. You know, being a perceptive person I was, Bill told me at that point was, you know, we win this game, there's no telling how long I'll still be around. if I'd have known better. But, you know, as it turned out, that was his last game too.
You mean, I'm sorry, you said Bill said that Bill was going to retire too?
Well, he said if we win this game, there's no telling what I'll do too.
Okay. Uh-huh.
But, you know, he was 100% okay with it.
Yeah.
You know, he thought it was good. It was good timing and whatnot when I told him my reasons. Bob, on the other hand, told me I was crazy and said I could still play for 2 or 3 years. Hmm.
Did you ever any regrets that you didn't come back to get another one?
Probably not until I was in the booth doing radio for Super Bowl 24, calling the game with Jack Buck and Hank Stram, watching them destroy the Denver Broncos. Yeah, at that point I was like, "Damn it!" But no, I'm not a rearview mirror kind of guy by nature. And it wouldn't have, I mean, the reasons I had for leaving when I left, you know, had nothing to do with, you know, hanging on for one more.
Well, you might not be a rear view mirror type of guy, but I'm sure you'll be reliving a lot of great memories this weekend when you see your former teammates. It should be a great time, and it should be great seeing the whole gang back together.
Well, thanks. I'm really looking forward to it. Can't wait to see them all. Especially Dwight.
Hey, Randy, thank you so much for joining me on the 49ers Insider Podcast.
All right, Matt. No problem, man.
The 49ers Insider Podcast on NBC Sports Bay Area.com.